I remember as a very young child, that was way before the war broke out. Things were very normal and beautiful in a very unsophisticated way when I think back. There were no magazines, no papers in our town. The only entertainment was family and friends getting together and singing. Somebody in our family on my father's side, one of the brothers, finally got a vitrola, which was the most beautiful sight. We never saw anything like it, and everybody in town used to go to their house just to listen to vitrola records. And my father leaving to go to Argentina, I remember how sad I was. My sisters and I would cry, but we always looked forward for the day when he'd come back, because twice I can remember he went away. And each coming back was full of beautiful presents that little girls loved, like real dolls that we've never seen in Kasilov. Other kinds of little toys that he brought. And just seeing him back was the greatest thrill of my life, because he was so handsome and so loving for the short time that we had him. As I grew older, I never even knew why he went back and forth to Argentina. They must have known somebody there that he'd stay with. He went to get ideas about how to make furniture, because he was a carpenter and a cabinet maker with his father. The shop was in my grandmother's house, his parents' house. I used to love to watch my grandfather and my father work on wood. It was very creative, and it was something for a child to do after my lessons and the teachers that used to come to the house and teach us how to read and write. I'd run right over to that house because it was a big family. I had a lot of aunts and uncles, and everybody was a clown making jokes and singing, and I used to love to sit in the shop and just watch my father work. That was the reason I learned later on why he went to Argentina twice that I can remember. And while he was there, he'd send home beautiful mirrors, gilded frames, gorgeous paintings that we didn't even know the value of these paintings. They were the real things, and we'd hang them up in the house. We have beautiful mahogany bedroom furniture and cradles that my father and my grandmother used to make. That's where we used to sleep until we were maybe 5 or 6 years old. They were like cribs, only they used to rock. They were beautifully constructed cradles. It seems everybody on my street that were real close by used to come into my house when they got dressed to see themselves in a full-length mirror that my father had sent from Argentina. Nobody had one like that in the whole town. I must tell you about Uncle Yur. Before he went into the army, he had a store. He learned how to be a furrier from an older man who had a fur factory. And so he learned how to make fur hats in the wintertime. In the summertime, he would make caps. And he had a store in the main market where all the stores used to be together, one next to another. And he had a big store, and he used to do a lot of business with the peasants that came there to display their fruits and vegetables. They used to come and they used to shop in his store. But he had to give it up when he had to go into the army. When he came back, he didn't take on with the business again because it all fell apart while he was gone. And there weren't too many people buying those hats. So he decided to rig up, believe it or not, I don't know where he got the ideas, was all kinds of pipes and gadgets and stoves. Everything was made out of iron and tin. He rigged up machines in part of the house, and he used to make whiskey, of all things. He used to make everything himself with a friend of his helping him. They used to bury barrels in the cellar. They used to ferment all kinds of ingredients. Then they used to put it through the machine. And I remember watching everything they did. And the liquor used to drip out very clear. It looked like water, but it was pretty powerful. And he used to sell that. And part of the house he partitioned off for the farmers and the peasants used to come in there, and he would sell them the liquor and salami, homemade salami and homemade bread. Everything was homemade in Kosilov. And he made a lot of money on that. To me, he was the greatest hero in the world. As long as he was around, nobody was afraid of anything. And he was very young. And he always lived with my mother and my grandmother. That was the style. Everybody lived together in my grandmother's house. Until one morning, the whole machine blew up in his face. And the miraculous part, when I look back now, with the tiniest little hospital that we had with only one doctor in his family helping him out, another doctor that used to come to visit us when we were small and sick. They must have been geniuses in those days, because I can remember for a long time his whole face was bandaged up. All you could see was his eyes and his mouth. And the doctor would come every day, and I have no idea what he did to him or what he applied. But he came out of it without any scars. He suffered a lot. It was very painful. I remember him screaming and crying. He couldn't have been more than maybe 20 years old. I observed and I listened, and as I got older, I found out why he went into the whiskey business, because there was no money coming in after my father was killed. That's when he took up with that. And he made a lot of friends among the peasants. So we were always invited to their homes. And on Sundays, not Saturdays, we weren't allowed to carry anything or do anything that was like working. But on Sundays, they let us come. And it was a big treat for us children to see their farmhouses, the way they lived. It was really beautiful. And they had an overabundance of fruit and vegetables they almost always wanted to get rid of. They never sold. They had so much to sell, and they still had so much left over that they used to give to friends, and we were one of their friends, and we used to carry home all these delicious things. All for the price of maybe a holly. They had all the wheat and all the beautiful fruits, but they didn't know how to cook or bake. So if we brought them that, we'd get all these goodies in return for a piece of holly or a whole holly and some cakes that we used to bring to them. I also remember as a small child, the big thrill when the peasants used to bring big sack, like big potato sacks, full of walnuts in green, thick shells. And we used to have to take the shells off and put them out and put a big cloth outside in the sun where there were trees and there were no trees, where the sun was very strong, and with peel off this green skin from the walnuts, and just lay the walnuts out facing the sun to dry them. And they were the most delicious walnuts I ever tasted in my life. And that was one of the house was always full of fruit and nuts. And since my mother, my grandmother did so much baking, everything was with walnuts. And we used to do that was because we enjoyed doing it. It wasn't a chore, it wasn't part of a chore. We just loved to do these things. It was a way to keep busy. And we used to also play a lot of games with our little friends. I remember living in fear most of my young life during the war after my father was killed and his brothers that went away to war and never came back. It seems each time they changed different parties, different soldiers marched into our town. I think it was a prank. I didn't understand then, but later on, as I grew older, it was like a prank for them to go around from house to house and pull you out in the middle of the night, mostly the men folks, and beat them up. You can hear them scream, and it seems I always had my hands over my ears not to hear screaming. And you wondered when they'd come to your door next, which they did twice that I can recall. It's almost hard to talk about it. I used to run in the middle of the night. I was the one that always ran away. I couldn't face anything. I was so frightened. And I'd always run to my grandmother, my father's parents. I always talk about his parents and his brothers and sisters because they were such a big family. You felt so protected being amongst them. And everybody was close by. I had to run out of the back door of a house and just keep running to get to their house. It wasn't too far. My mother didn't have anybody because Uncle Morris and Aunt Bela were already in America. Uncle Yu was at war, and they were very frightening, sad times for everybody, especially children. When things finally quieted down, that's when they started to make their preparations to leave Casillas. And when I think back, I'll never know how they did it. They had a go to different places, sign different papers, and all the traveling on a wagon from one town to another, which took about 7 or 8 days. And we left all our most beautiful possessions we left behind. Just took the most, what they considered the most important things. Like the beddings to keep us warm. My mother was sewing underwear late into the night, taking it along to keep us warm. And she sewed dresses like there weren't going to be any dresses or underwear when we got to another country. But they really didn't know any better. But most of the things they did, I just don't know how they got through everything, to do all the things, because like I said before, I don't know where they got their news or their knowledge. It was such a small place that we lived in. You see, where we live, most of our neighbors, everybody in town that we knew were mostly people who were Jewish, and they were all in business. Each one had a business that made a living. Tailors, there were grocery stores. My grandmother used to have a business. Ropes, her husband, my grandfather used to make rope. And when he passed away, she took over and did everything like a man. She made all the same like he used to do. And I remember her doing that. And I used to be fascinated to watch her work at it. And some of the Jewish people moved away to a dorf. A dorf is a little, is where the peasants live, farmland, and they became farmers. But very few Jewish people ever did that. And we had farmers surrounding where we lived, like the back of our house. We'd cross over a road, and there were all the peasants where we used to get fresh milk, or they would deliver it to the house. But we used to bring our own utensils, because everything had to be kosher. My grandmother was fanatically kosher, my mother's mother. So was everybody else. But she was particularly strict, like the Hasidim are in this country. That's the way she used to be. And everybody was really afraid to do the wrong thing. Nobody thought of doing the wrong thing when she was around. As far as being religious and kosher, you had to follow all the instructions according to her beliefs. It was fun going to the farmhouses where all the Christian people lived, and they always loved my sisters and I. And my mother, they idolized her. They used to bring her all kinds of gifts because she used to do sewing for them. And in turn, they used to do a lot of linen embroidery and the most beautiful things they used to bring her as gifts when she would do sewing for them. On special occasions, they would dress up, and it was always very, very colorful things they used to wear. We were even invited, which was not usual. It was unusual to be invited to their homes to go to a wedding, and we as children were permitted to go and watch the wedding and the dancing. And all the festivities were very exciting to watch. My grandmother would never go near any of those places. She made you feel like you were going to become a goy if you ever spoke to one. Once we got the milk into the house, my grandmother used to make, everything was made out of milk. First she'd make the cream, and then she'd make sour cream, then she'd make butter out of the cream, and then she'd make yogurt, and one more, I can't think of it, it'll come to me later on. All these dairy products that she used to make by hand, and whip up the cream for butter. That was fun. You must have seen it when they show Western pictures sometimes. The old West, how they used to churn butter. Well, we did it the same way. And each one would take a turn and beating away on the cream, because your arms would begin to hurt after a while. I must tell you about the things that Kasov, it was so small, the things they loved and believed in was a little culture. And they must have all picked it up because they were always traveling to bigger cities. And that's where they used to get all their ideas about culture, about news, about styles. Although we only had one bakery on a main road that was coming down from, like, the peasants used to pass that particular area. That bakery was where all the peasants would buy baked goods, because people that lived in Kosilov never bought anything like that. They baked their own everything. And that area also had a beautiful house, I recall, where a musician used to live. He used to own a band, and those musicians played at all the weddings. And from those musicians, people used to have their children take lessons, like Lee used to take violin lessons from that particular band, the violinist who was the leader of the band. I'll always remember him. He was, to me at that time, seemed like a very old man, but I guess he wasn't as old as he appeared to me. because I was a young child. And he used to come to her house to give her lessons. When she got a little bigger, I used to go with her to his house because it was a long walk from where we lived. And they also used to put up little plays in his house. There was no theater. They used to build up a platform in the backyard or some part of the house that was vacant. And who do you think was always in the plays? Lee. She was the little actress from the time she was able to talk. She used to sing and play the violin, and she also used to have talking parts. Then she used to, we were just about the age before we left Kasilov, where we were able to do our own plays. She used to be the leader of organizing the children. Well, we were more than little children already. She used to organize little groups of talented children, including herself. And she used to make up our own plays. You had to talk, you had to sing, you had to dance. My part was always singing. I also recall, now that I think of it, where they got all their ideas, like my mother used to go to her, to Odessa. Yeah, I guess that's what they used to call it. Where cousin Lou's mother used to live. She went away from Kasilov to live there to make a better life for herself. And when she got there, she married cousin Lou's father. She met him there and she married him. And they left Odessa to go to America. Believe it or not, there was a train that you had to travel, like from where we lived, with a wagon maybe, not too long a ride to a train station that would take you to all these different, to the bigger cities, away from Kasilov if you wanted to change your way of life, and then you would come home and go back, and some of them remained away from Kasilov. They stayed in those bigger towns. And I remember my grandmother, who had a sister living in those big towns, took Lee along with her once to visit her sister. That was the most exciting thing for a child, to leave Kasilov and see something bigger and better. And I remember her coming back with Grandma and all the stories she told us about the good time she had. They stayed there for about a week. We also had, it all comes back to me because I'm concentrating what you wanted to know, a sugar factory. Almost at the end of the town, it was an endless walk. They had a huge gate that you could walk in, and they let you walk just so far and then you had to turn back. We could see a house outside of those tall walls that were surrounding that house. It looked like a castle. And we children were very curious. We used to walk through there all the time, not into the castle where the people lived. They must have been very wealthy because we found out later on how wealthy they were. Because when the communists marched in, there were so many different parties marching in and out during the war times. They destroyed the castle, and then everybody was able to walk in and just look to see how these people lived. And it was breathtaking for children, or anybody that lived in Kasilov has never seen anything like it. I remember the peasants every morning. I could hear them singing. They used to go on wagons, like a caravan of wagons of beets. They used to deliver that to the sugar factory. The sugar was made from beets, white and the red or purple, whatever you might call it. And they would always sing on their way to the factory. I used to be fascinated. They used to wake us up and we'd watch that caravan of wagons filled up with beets from the farms to bring to the sugar factory. That was a big industry in Kasilov. There was no school that would teach you Russian or any other languages. Everybody had private tutors come in to teach us and our friends, to, if you wanted to learn how to read and write German, Russian, of course, was a must. And these teachers, later in life, I realized, did not get their learnings in Kislev. They went to bigger towns, to universities. And then they came back home to become teachers. The same thing applied to a Hebrew teacher that we had come to the house. But just about the time we were ready to leave, they built a school. And we went there for a very short time. And the one that made the most progress in learning, of course, was Lee. She took up German and Russian, which she already knew. And she was a brilliant student. She did everything well. And she got to meet the wealthiest children from the other side of the town. It was a nicer neighborhood. And she was a little bit of a snob when she got to know them. And she associated with them only. She sort of dropped away from her old friends, but she loved being with them. They were the intellectual types. And she used to perform for them when they used to come to our house, which wasn't too often. She used to play the violin for them. For a short time that I had my father, I could always see his face. He was the handsomest man in the world. His face, every time she played the violin for somebody, they always used to make your children entertain their friends when they came over. The pride he took was his idea for how to play the violin, as I can recall. And she kept it up all the time, even when we were in Cuba. She still took violin lessons. She really loved it. You know, when we took the boat from Warsaw to go to Cuba, when we got on that ship, it was fancy enough. It was first class, second class, and third class. We were on third class. And I recall how nice the people in first class that worked in the kitchen always managed to sneak food. For some reason, we must have been very friendly and outgoing. For Lee and Mickey and I, they always used to bring down goodies during mealtime. They used to sneak it out to bring it down to our third class. It was like a dungeon. But we were always on top of the deck. We never stayed inside. They used to bring down all the goodies. It was on that ship that we met a lot of people from Kislev that we didn't know, had ran away from Kislev to different parts of Poland, and they just happened to get that same ship that we did. It probably was the first one that ever left anyway after the war that was going towards Cuba. And we didn't go direct to Cuba. We went to several different places. Amsterdam, that's the one. Amsterdam was the first stop. And we got off the ship, and I remember they took us to a place where everybody had a shower. And the commotion, excitement of people afraid of losing their children, they wanted, was so crowded. And I remember my mother never lost sight of the three of us. Everybody had to be showered before they came out, in case they wanted to visit the town. I guess they were afraid they would bring some kind of contagious disease. And everybody went to town and they shopped and they bought oranges and they had the most delicious candies, I recall. And we stayed over like a day and then we proceeded to go on the ship again. And from then on, we landed in Havana. It was a long, long trip. I think it was from Amsterdam that it was 3 or 4 weeks that we were on board ship, maybe even more. I really don't recall. I know it was a long time. And believe it or not, after realizing and meeting all these wonderful friends that my mother knew through the years, everybody was like one happy family. They did nothing but clown around and dance and perform on the ship, and everybody used to dance and have a good time. When the music played up in the first class, we could hear it on deck where we were, and everybody just had the greatest time. They remained friends the whole year that they landed in Cuba. There was like one happy family. Nobody lost track of one another. We saw each other almost every day. They all went their different ways, and a lot of them came to New York with us. And I recall they were always visiting our house when we finally did land in New York. I never understood why they used to kill people. Especially, I always used to hear the Jews were being killed in different towns. I learned later on as I got older, each time a new party took over the government, was either communists or Bolsheviks or whatever, they always seemed to blame all these changes on the Jews. And the other hateful reason that they had for killing was they all believed that the Jews were responsible for killing of Christ, which I didn't even understand then what they were talking about. That was the sadness of all the innocent people being killed. I remember us always for a long time living in and out of the cellar. Everybody was hiding, or they'd go to some desolated house that was out of town. We'd stay in their cellar, and somebody, as soon as it quieted down, would run out and go home and bring back some food, a change of clothes. It became a way of life after a while, until things finally did quiet down. And that was the time we started to make preparations for leaving Russia. As children, we were all excited about taking such a long ride. Everybody used to want to go on a wagon. Every time a horse and wagon came by with somebody you knew, you wished they'd give you a ride. I mean, us children. It was very exciting thinking of leaving and being on a wagon for days. Well, after the trip we had taken from one town to another for so many days of traveling on a wagon, I can recall never wanting to go on a wagon ride again. Let me tell you about some happy times as I can recall when I was a child. The preparation of Passover was the most thrilling thing for children to look forward to. Like you might say, the children in this country look forward to Christmas. That is, the Christian children anyway. Well, we used to look forward to Passover in the same way. Buying new clothes, well, not really buying, we had all our clothes made, custom made. There were no stores to buy clothes from unless you traveled to bigger towns and you brought home pretty things for your family. And the excitement of the nice weather coming, and all the front doors would open up. We didn't have to go through one door all the time to keep the warmth in the house. And the sun would shine, and it was beautiful weather. And we'd start taking down all the dishes from the attic. Everything had to be boiled and cleaned, and everything had to be cleaned out of the house that was chumitz. All the utensils were taken outdoors, and we used to wash them on the grass and dry them in the sun and make sure everything was clean for Passover. Everything was burned, like the bread, we burned the bread. And all the utensils that were used all year round were taken out of the house completely. And everything that was brought down was primarily for Passover use. And it was very exciting for children to go to the year. We had a shoemaker right on our block. We'd take turns and having our shoes made. He was the only man that did it in our area that I can recall. I don't remember anybody else doing that type of work, but there must have been that I didn't know about. And I, for one, used to sit almost all day whenever I had time, away from Hebrew school or from school or whatever. I'd sit and watch this man work on my shoes. And the color of the leather still stands out in my mind. It was the most thrilling experience. They weren't just shoes that you, to keep on your feet, to keep your feet covered. It was beautifully made. I wondered where they had gotten the talent in such a small town to do all these beautiful things. And then my mother, with all her helpers, they would start making new dresses, even new underwear. Everything was made in the house, or you went to a tailor to have everything made. Those were the happy times. Then there was Hanukkah time. We used to have, our mothers would all make little pouches of leftover material, and each child would get a little pouch. And she'd go to all her relatives, and they would give us money and put them in these little pouches. And our parents, well, our mothers and grandmothers mostly, would bake special delicacies. And they'd put them on a pretty platter, and they'd cover them up. And the children had the chore. Well, it wasn't really a chore. It was like an honor to bring all these goodies, cookies, and all kinds of cakes to your friends and relatives. And it was just the most exciting time of the year. Did I ever tell you that before they took all the boys into war, and a lot of them were taken, and a lot of them had no cause to fight any of those wars because the Jews were so discriminated against. All the boys that I knew in our group that were friends of Uncle Yours, including Uncle Yur, they used to have their teeth taken out, and they'd hide in cellars and live on matzahs. They wouldn't eat any other food, so their health, they'd be in poor health, so they wouldn't be too healthy, hoping that they wouldn't be taken into the war, because so many of them didn't come back, including two of my father's brothers who never came back from the war. Young, handsome, very healthy boys. Uncle Yur finally had to go too. I remember how my grandmother, his mother, would pray a lot, and she'd be up all night praying with her prayer books and crying. But he had to go. There was no way. They finally got to him and his friends. And if anybody rejected or said anything about not wanting to go, they used to take him in the marketplace, make sure that everybody saw what they would do. They would put him over a piece of board, and they used to whip him till they practically bled. That was their punishment for rejecting to go into the war. I never watched it. I'm just repeating all the things that I used to hear as a child. Talking about matzahs, it all comes back to my mind. Another thrilling part for children, when they started to bake the matzahs for Passover, they would take over an empty store or a house that had a huge, huge room that would accommodate the machines that had to go in. And we'd watch them make matzahs. It wasn't really a bakery, but every home had an oven that would be called like a professional oven in the bakeries in this country. We had one too. But they all selected one house that had the biggest oven, and everybody would bring their own flour and watch them. There was a professional baker that would come and just bake matzahs for everybody, and they would take them home. And I think I used to stay there whenever I came home from school till they practically chased me out. I was so fascinated watching them prepare to make matzahs. And you had to bring your own eggs if you wanted egg matzahs. Where I come from, that was like an amusement for a child, because there were very few things in those days, even in big towns like we have today, to keep children amused with all different toys, radios. Well, there was no such a thing anywhere at the time. Those were the good times I can remember, which didn't last very long. I always was fascinated, even though everybody took it for granted that's the way they made things. I was always fascinated with my grandmother, watching her cook and bake, especially when she used to make homemade noodles. Everybody made homemade noodles in those days. She used to work so fast, I used to think her fingers were going to get cut off from the knife. She made the most delicious noodles, wide noodles, narrow noodles. And when they didn't eat that, they used to send us. My mother was always too busy, so was my grandmother. It was our job to go to a certain place near the market where you'd get kasha. You know what kasha is. It was made of little oats. And we watched them put those grains into a little machine, and they'd grind it up, and then we used to take home. Everything was fresh made. We used to grind that pepper. They used to have special little tools, beautifully iron cast. They looked like gold on the outside, and you would grind your own pepper by hand, or cinnamon sticks. All these things used to fascinate me. I'm surprised I didn't turn out to be a professional cook. And I used to love to eat, of course, I still do. Those were the things I can recall with great pleasure. I don't know if I ever told you, when we came to Havana, Cuba, finally, we stayed in a hotel. It was very nice. It was beautiful. Especially where I come from, I've never seen anything so pretty. and people used to come and check in and out. There were some people that stayed there for almost the length of time we did. They had business in Havana. And a man once approached my mother. He and his company were building Havana Park. It was like Luna Park in Coney Island. Well, not quite as big, but just to get an idea of what I'm talking about. And they had all kinds of sideshows. It was the beginning of Havana Park. They never had anything like that in Havana. It was more like a resort for many years before we came. And it was built, I remember, where all the stores were. The stores then appeared like on Fifth Avenue. They were so beautiful. At least for me, it had a special fascination. I never saw stores with store windows that were so beautiful. And the man approached my mother in the hotel and Uncle Leo, and Uncle Leo was like our father, and he wanted to know if he could use Lee in one of his shows. She was very beautiful with long, gorgeous hair and very bright. And she always spoke whatever language she took up, she always spoke it fluent. And she took up the Spanish language fast. Well, all three of us did. And he wanted to put her in a show, in a sideshow, to play the violin. And that had all these trick mirrors. I never did understand then, but I found out later on. There were trick mirrors, and it made her look like she was just only from her waist up she was shown. The rest of her was a mystery to the people that came in to look at her. It looked like she was cut off in half, like only half of her. And people really believed it. Like she had no legs, and she would stand there and play the violin. And they would pay my mother a certain amount of money for her performances. And we used to spend all the time while she was there with her. We'd stay with her till her act was over, and we would all go home together to the hotel. And later on, maybe 6 months after we were there,